And as I noted previously, you know, C3s are eligible for a charitable contribution deduction. That is the sort of big advantage that they've got in terms of fundraising from the general public. It's extraordinarily helpful in getting people interested in donating. But other key characteristics of 501c3 organizations include this non-distribution constraint. So charities get their tax-exempt status, and I'm using the term charity and 501c3 organization interchangeably, because they hold and use their assets in trust for the public good. Because of that, they can't have owners or shareholders. And they can't therefore distribute profits to owners or shareholders. They can't pay dividends the way that for-profit organizations do. So that's a key difference between C3s and for-profits. For-profits can have owners, they can pay out their excess profits. C3s cannot, but in exchange for that restriction, they get the privilege of tax exempt status. So you might think, well, okay, if you can't distribute profits to your shareholders, you can't have profits at all, probably, right? Because we refer to these as nonprofits very often. No, you absolutely can make money as a charitable organization, and you can turn a healthy profit. And Darren will talk a little bit more about this later. There are some constraints that come along with that. But the fact that an organization is sort of referred to as a nonprofit does not mean that it is prohibited from making a profit. So just to break down quickly sort of the differences between 501c3 organizational types, there are two broad types, private foundations and public charities. All C3s are classified as one or the other of those two types. Private foundations then are further broken down into operating foundations and non-operating foundations. Operating foundations typically conduct charitable activities directly. Non-operating foundations typically make grants to other organizations to conduct charitable programs. The big difference between the two sort of broad categories, private foundations and public charities, is that private foundations are more restricted than public charities. They generally are subject to more rules that they have to comply with in terms of the activities they can conduct and the types of transactions that they can undertake. This is generally because private foundations are typically funded or controlled by either one individual, one family, one entity, or a small group of entities. And Congress took a look at that back when it was writing these tax laws and essentially said, well, gosh, if you're really sort of only under the control of a small group of people, we think you're probably more susceptible to abuse and to potentially being used for tax avoidance strategies. And so as a result, we're going to crack down a little bit more on the types of activities that you can conduct. Because of that, we have what we call the Chapter 42 excise tax regime, which imposes excise taxes on private foundations if they conduct certain types of activities, things like self-dealing, transactions with insiders, and certain types of grant making, among others. Also, donors to private foundations typically get less favorable treatment for their contribution deductions. The deductions, the limitations that are applied to those deductions are typically lower. And particularly when donating appreciated property, a private foundation may not be the place where you want to donate it. All C3s are presumed to be private foundations unless they can show for one reason or another that they qualify for public charity status. And those different statuses are outlined in sections 509A1 through 4 of the code. We're not going to talk about 509A4 in this presentation, but we'll go through the other three briefly. So 509A1 public charities include the types of charities that you think of when you are thinking about, you know, the term public charity: churches, schools, colleges, medical research organizations, hospitals, state college and university endowment funds. These are kind of your typical 509A1 public charities. They also include what are called publicly supported organizations, or organizations that typically get a certain amount of their regular support from governments, from other public charities, and from the general public. That sounds simpler than it is. There is a mathematical calculation that's applied in order to make sure that a particular organization qualifies for this type of public charity status. It has to get 1/3 of its total support from what we'd call good public sources, i.e. the ones that I just mentioned, governments, other public charities, and the general public, but any contributions from anyone other than governments or other public charities are subject to a haircut, essentially. Their support is counted towards that one-third number, only up to 2% of the organization's total support for the year. So as you can tell, this is not a particularly intuitive calculation. Once an organization decides to seek public charity status using this classification as a publicly supported organization, it has to keep a pretty tight watch on the public support that it's receiving in order to make sure that it can continue to qualify under this test. And the test is sort of run on a rolling for your average basis. If you fail that one-third test, there's a backup test that's available to you for still qualifying as a publicly supported charity under Section 509A1. You can avail yourself, if possible, of what's called the 10% facts and circumstances test. So to meet that test, you have to show that at least 10% rather than one-third of your total support comes from those good public sources. And you have to show certain facts and circumstances demonstrating that you are operating sort of in furtherance of the public benefit. There are no sort of particular facts that are dispositive, but some of the characteristics that the IRS takes into account are, the fact that you've got a fundraising program that's designed to generate broad public support, the fact that your board is drawn from a wide range of individuals with different roles within the community, the public nature of your operations. If, for example, you're running a museum that's open to the public, that type of thing would be a good fact for the facts and circumstances test.